Good morning from WMNF Tampa. We are back with Midpoint, and I'm Shelley Reback, your host. Every year at holiday time, I try to do a show on an issue that focuses on some concept that many people struggle with. Last year, we focused on forgiveness and redemption. This year, my Thanksgiving holiday was filled with family, friends, and food, and I hope yours was great, too. But for many people, the holidays are the worst and most difficult time of year. They are a time of isolation, loneliness, maybe depression. So it seemed to me that this is the perfect time to tackle our main topic today, which is the epidemic of loneliness that our modern society is confronting. We have a lot to discuss, so we're going to jump right into our topic today. The United States Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, recently came out with a report finding that loneliness is a serious public health problem. Loneliness and isolation is epidemic in the United States, and it has been a growing problem even before the COVID-19 pandemic. Approximately half of U.S. adults reported experiencing measurable levels of loneliness, which fundamentally affects our mental, physical, and societal health. It is causing significant health stresses in individuals, comparable to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And it is a bigger health problem even than obesity, with greater consequences on our overall health. The lack of social connection poses a significant risk for individual health and longevity. Luckily, it is a problem that is now getting more attention from public health agencies and governments around the world. The United Kingdom and Japan have both created top-level government posts to deal with loneliness as a public health crisis. Our Surgeon General's report lays out a framework for a national strategy to advance social connection. It details recommendations that individuals, governments, workplaces, health systems, and community organizations can take to increase connection in their lives and in their communities to improve their health and their quality of life. Our own local USF School of Public Health is one of the places that is taking on this problem and working to address it. Today we have with us some of the students from the USF College of Public Health Activist Lab and their academic advisor, Dr. Karen Liller, who are going to talk with us about how we can confront social isolation and loneliness in our own communities and what is being done here and in other countries to educate people about the issue and to develop a public health response to it. So let's meet our guests. I want to welcome Dr. Karen Liller, who is a professor at USF who directs the Activist Lab at the USF College of Public Health. I'm happy to have you with us, Dr. Liller.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
And I also want to welcome some students who are working with the Activist Lab. Amadeo Brandon, thanks for being with us.
Yes, thank you for having us, Ms. Rebaum.
And Jenny Ho, happy to have you too. These are students who are involved with the project on loneliness that the Activist Lab has taken on, and we're glad you're all here. So let me start with Dr. Liller. The Surgeon General in recent research seems to indicate that the epidemic of loneliness is resulting from a lack of sufficient social connection. So tell us, what is social connection, and is it declining, especially since the pandemic and the growth of online interaction? What are we facing?
Well, sure, that's a great question. Well, social connection, first of all, is different from loneliness. Loneliness is a subjective feeling that occurs when someone just feels that the number of connections or individuals in their life is not what they think it should be. So you feel lonely. However, social connections are measurable. These are real connections that people have. It can be groups, it can be individuals, family, friends, but it's more than just the number. It's also the quality of those interactions with those individuals and also the functions that they serve for you. Are they mentors? Are they helpful? So your social connections are very, very important, and it's important that you have a wide range of them. And as for your comment about social media, yes, I think that social media has had a role since COVID. Yes, we've seen more of this, but it was around, as the Surgeon General said, even before COVID.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the things that lead us to be less socially connected? We talked about the growth of social media and being on our phones all the time. One of the things that strikes me locally here in Tampa, and we always try to, you know, focus on local, and it's not just Tampa, of course, it's Pinellas, Pasco, but, you know, we don't have public transportation. We don't have a good public transportation system, and it seems to me that when I've lived in places with public transportation, that that was something that fostered more social connection, even if it's fleeting. What are some of the other things that you think inhibit our ability to develop social connection?
Yeah, you know, I think it has, I think transportation is a part, but I think it's really become much more ingrained in our culture for some reason. And I think COVID, you know, really added to this as people became more and more isolated. What we see as we age, we can see that our number of connections tends to go down. We spend less time and engagement with friends and family. But I think a misnomer, too, is that this only occurs in older individuals. Right. That's sort of, but yet the data.
It's not true, is it?
No. The data are showing that we see higher rates in younger individuals now, which is very concerning for our population and I think in public health in general.
Well, let me bring the students into this discussion because I've been reading a lot in the news lately about this epidemic of anxiety in young people around your ages, your both college students, right, or grad students? Are you grad students now or college students? Speak up.
I'm undergrad.
Undergrad?
So I'm a graduate student.
You're the graduate student, Amadeo? Okay, so, you know, I read about this epidemic of anxiety in people your age, and I wonder if that's in some part because the way that you've been raised, as opposed to my generation or Dr. Liller's generation, you know, you've had to confront things like school shootings and these traumatizing, safety checks every month, where shooter drills and you know, this fear of strangers and this a lack of sort of free range childhood where parents are sort of helicoptering over kids. And I just think I wonder if it creates this culture of fear that makes young people more hesitant to reach out to people, you know, to be more reticent about your social connections. What do you think about that? Somebody talk to me about it.
Yeah, I think that's really where it lies. It's the cultural differences, and there's a lot of sensory overload with the things going on, a lot of fear, a lot of traumatic events that are occurring, and people don't know where to turn. So they want to just keep it in their problems because they feel like if they keep it in, then they can focus on other things that distracts them. So I think technology is a good outlet for them to retreat and have security and still interact with people. So that's why I think the communication methods are shifting and people aren't seeking as much help because they're doing other activities. They're prioritizing other things in their life.
And a lot of it is online. I mean, so for even when there is a communication, it's texting, it's emails, there's a distance of, you know, technology between you and the person that you're connecting with, even when you are communicating. One of the things I've noticed, I've been doing this show for the last 5 or 6 years now, and one of the things I noticed is that when we started giving out the text number for our listeners to communicate with us, we always give out the phone number, the email, and now the text number. And when we started giving out the text number, we started getting fewer and fewer phone calls. So, you know, I want to ask my listeners, you know, you're listening to WMNF, we're talking about loneliness. Does a talk back opportunity like this show make you feel less lonely? Do you feel like you get some sort of social connection from being able to talk back to us as we, every week, you know, get into some topic that may interest you? Does it give you an opportunity to feel more connected to your community, to me, to our other listeners that you know are out there in the world listening to you when you give us a call? And I'd like you to give us a call right now and tell me whether you feel like a talkback opportunity like this show is helpful to you in avoiding loneliness, for example. Or even if you're not lonely, does it enrich your life to be able to communicate and talk back on the air to me, to other listeners? So give us a call at 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text if you don't want to talk at 813-433-0885. I'd like to hear from you about this. One of the other things I noticed in my research about what causes a lack of social connection and more loneliness was surprising to me. It was that lower education and lower income are also risk factors for depression and, because of a lack of social connection. That surprised me. What do we know about that?
Well, I think that's one of the social determinants of health that affects us in so many ways. If you have lower education, lower economic opportunities, there's probably, you're not going to have the opportunity to interface with others like you might be able to. The connections won't be built. Your networks possibly will be smaller. So the importance of education is not only to advance and to improve your situation in life, but it's also those connections and those networks and those people that you meet and the opportunities you're provided. It's sort of a cycle, right? You have education, you have opportunities, you meet people, and then you meet more people, and then you network,
you go to work,
it grows.
You
go to work, you see people.
Right, yeah. I know retirement was a big shock to me in terms of the lack of social connection.
Right.
And it propelled me into, volunteering for WMNF and doing this show because, when work is a club, work is a social opportunity as well as an income derived opportunity.
That's right.
And when you give that up, when you lose that, mm-hmm. you really need to find another opportunity, to make connections with people. I have a response here by text from the number ending in 8704 who says, just for a little perspective, I text rather than call because I'm listening while I'm at work, typically driving, and if I'm on hold, even for a couple of minutes, I may have to hang up, whereas I can text voice to text quickly, easily, and safely. Good point, 8704. That is a good point. We do try to make it convenient for you, but one of the reasons why, I hope we continue to have callers is because it just makes for more interesting radio to have more voices.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, I try to have guests on the show, it's not just my voice you hear 100% of the time. And in that regard, I'm going to bring on Jane from Sarasota who's calling in. Jane, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that texting and social media are great for some things, but not for others. My mother died, I'm Florida. Thank you for the funeral. And of the friends and relatives, one has car trouble, another is leaving town, and another is working. My mom's funeral is tomorrow, and all the text messages and tweets and things in the world don't make up for people being there.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a tweet from a follower in South Africa, which is helpful, but obviously I've never met her, and she's certainly not going to fly from South Africa for the funeral of someone she's never met.
Yeah, so you're saying that face-to-face connection, face-to-face communication with another person is really significant, much more meaningful than just electronic communication.
Sure, electronic communication is better than nothing at all, but I remember when I was a kid, we sent cards, we sent flowers. I got one flower arrangement from my cousins in North Carolina and some cards. But again, I guess emailing and texting and tweeting seem to be the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little hurtful when you were brought up to actually be there or send material things.
Mm.
Maybe yeah. I sound like a materialistic person, but right now that's really missing in my life.
Yeah, I understand. You know, especially at a time of grief, you know, like that, when people feel like there's such enormous value to being surrounded by people to sort of demonstrate that you're not alone, that the loss of that person doesn't leave you alone. What about that? What do you guys think about that?
I think that the grief is really, really important. And that is a time when you do need those social connections. And all the social media in the world, while it is helpful, as the caller said, to reach out to family and friends that you haven't seen or can't be there, but there's human beings want that social connection. We are social animals. Mm. And so that's how we're built.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, circumstances in our culture now almost has us walking away from that. People who spend 2 hours or more on social media a day basically have less, more loneliness, more feelings of loneliness than someone who spends 30 minutes or less. And so I think this issue is so important. But again, I have to emphasize that we need to really think about the younger generation because they are growing up into this situation. So as we look at this, as we become older, how much worse for them might
right.
it be?
Right. Jane, I'm really sorry for your loss. And, you know, I hope that, you know, I hope that people do come to give you comfort for your mother's funeral and you know, may her memory be a blessing for you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling in. We have Bonnie from Zephyr Hills on the line. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. I just was listening to your show, and I just wanted to say that a very simple comment that when somebody says to me, if I'm going to call somebody, oh, they won't answer the phone, they only text. It just gives me such a sad feeling and such a down, hurtful feeling that they'll just won't answer the phone because all they do is text. And I find that so sad.
Well, you know, I noticed that too, that even in my own circle, people don't really answer the phone, especially if you're not identified in their mm-hmm. contacts and you just show up as a number they don't recognize. But one of the ways that I've gotten around that is I text, are you available for a call now, or, you know, what's a good time to speak? And then I get a text back that says maybe 3 p.m. or whatever, you know, or yeah, now's great. And then I make a call and then, you know, we have a phone conversation.
Well, as a previous caller has said, it has its place, it has its time if you have to do it quickly and so forth. But I think that has morphed into people doing it all the time in lieu of personal contact and personal emotion. And I think, unfortunately, there's sort of a social thing going on where people are not learning how to interact personally with people. You don't get body language. You don't get emotion in a text. You don't get feeling. And I think people are expecting that less and less and less, where communication is just becoming technical.
You know, during the pandemic, a lot of my friends were set up things like Zoom cocktail parties or, you know, mm-hmm. They right. participated in webinars, you know, where they couldn't go to a lecture or an event or something like that. And so they participated on Zoom. And I have to agree with you, Bonnie. I felt really distant from the people that I Zoomed with, you know, that even though I could see their faces, somehow it felt like, well, I feel the same way about watching animation. You know, there was a two-dimensionality to it that really left me feeling distant from them. So I understand what you're saying, and I certainly appreciate you calling in and offering your thoughts. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you for taking callers.
Sure. Okay. You know, so other people that I know are more prone to experiencing social isolation are people with disabilities, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. Caregivers, people who identify as LGBTQ+, and people mm-hmm. in other marginalized groups, they all seem to face higher risks for loneliness and isolation too. Isn't mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah, that is true. Amadeo, would you like to respond
to
that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So recently I was doing some research, COPD, related to depression, and that's one of the big comorbidities that hurts people's experiences, because there's a lot of burdens associated with physical disorders. And it can transpire into a different amount of forms related to depression and anxiety. And it affects all kinds of age groups. So it's important that we adapt a lot of interventions around the age groups, especially contingent on the physical disorder that they do have.
Yeah, and also dementia. Mm-hmm. You know, researching for the show, I learned that 55 million people have dementia,
which can
make loneliness and isolation even worse. But the evidence suggests that there's a relationship that works in the other direction, mm-hmm. too, like that loneliness and isolation seem to increase mm-hmm. the risk of developing dementia by about 50%. Isn't that right, Dr. Lillard?
That is right. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because not only does loneliness create the physical problems, you know, premature death, for example, heart attack, stroke, all these kinds, but there's a very strong mental health component as well. So you're right, 50% of the cases, and that's because what's happening with loneliness, and as you're feeling this and lack of connections, it affects your body biologically, psychologically, and also physical behaviors that you do that can lead to these poor outcomes. So it's an extremely important topic, and I just wish that schools and communities, organizations, agencies would really take this on, because this needs to be discussed just as we discuss other risk factors for diseases and for mental health.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about what some of these organizations and agencies
yes.
are doing about this, including your own projects mm-hmm. through the Activist Lab.
Sure.
Let me take another call, though, because our phones are kind of blowing up with this topic, which I'm really glad to see. Gary in St. Pete, you're on the air. Gary?
I'm sorry. Oh, yes, that's me. I'm sorry. I kind of agree with a lot of everything you're saying. I'm a member of the LGBTQ community. I just lost my partner in July. And, you know, it's really hard.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Gary.
The whole texting thing I agree with, because texting in and of itself always seems mean. Anything
yeah.
you say. There's no...
Yeah, there's no nuance. It's hard to be
exactly.
sarcastic or making
exactly.
joke in texting.
Like one of my last friends blocked me because he thought I was trying to pick an argument and I wasn't.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. It's hard to be clear and nuanced in texting.
Yeah.
But
and
I'm sorry for your loss, Gary, and I thank you for calling in. I got a text here from 3357 who says, yes, this type of show does help. Thank you for this show. I can't always call because I trip over my tongue. That's from Wendy. But I'm so grateful that you wrote that in, Wendy, and told me that it does make a difference for you and that you appreciate the opportunity to call. Here's another one from 3860 who says, I do appreciate the opportunity to call or text and voice my opinion. My voice matters, and because of shows like this, I have an outlet. I don't feel particularly lonely, but it is challenging to get out and meet new people. Neighbors, work, places of worship, and clubs are the main sources, and sometimes that still isn't enough. It takes courage to step out and do things solo, be it movies, dinner, or karaoke. I'm outgoing, but I can see how it can be nerve-wracking for introverts. Mm. You know, that's really true. It is, you know, there's social, I don't know, awkwardness in going out on your own.
Right.
Maybe I believe, especially as a woman, you know, that it's even more difficult to make those efforts to get out on your own. Thank you, Natalie. Thanks for your message. Gosh, this is a topic that speaks to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of callers. I'm going to ask you to be patient, and we've got a bunch of emails and texts here too. But I want to give our guests the opportunity to talk about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now that we've had a chance to talk about what an important topic this is, and we see from our community's engagement how important they think it is. Tell us about what the Activist Lab at USF College of Public Health is doing to address this particular issue.
Well, thank you. I'll go ahead and set the stage for it. The Activist Lab at the college prepares our students to be advocates in public health and for a variety of issues. And this topic came up a little over a year ago or so. Our dean, Donna Peterson, sent me a note that said, one of our advisory board members talked to me and sent me information about a grocery store in the Netherlands. It's the Jumbo chain, I believe. And they started putting in slower checkout lanes. and they people loved it. Because as you know, when you go to the grocery store, the goal is, you know, let's get in, get out the fast as we can. And we don't like people in front of us taking a long time. So so they started putting in, the customer said, we need more time. So basically, they put in these slower checkout lanes, and it was wildly successful for the store. And then, of course, the Ministries of Loneliness, as was mentioned earlier, were started. So she was curious if the Activist Lab could do something about this. And we also had the Surgeon General's report and his new book, Together, that Dr. Murthy wrote, that I encourage people to read. So we thought, all right, let's reach out to grocery stores and see if they'll let us set up a little station where people can chat, maybe the slower checkout lanes. And I wish I could tell you we were wildly successful. We were not.
Publix was not.
No, it seems
counterintuitive to the commercial right. purpose of a store, though, to slow down the purchases. You know?
Exactly. But if you think about what happened, though, in the Netherlands, they ended up making such more profit because people were so excited to come to the store. So anyway, in the United States, not so much the case. They said, in fact, you're doing the exact opposite of what we hear our customers want. That's why we have self-checkouts now, because they want to get in. And I said, all right, so that didn't work.
Boycott those self-checkouts.
So where can we go now? And we thought, well, maybe we'll go to restaurants, because people come in, I thought, to eat, and they sit, and we can set up information and little chat areas. And Amadeo and Jenny, I'll let you tell the audience, what happened with the restaurants?
So with the restaurants, there was also a similar kind of culture we observed where people want to go in and out. They want to talk with the people they're comfortable with. They don't want to talk with us because we're strangers. They don't know what our intentions are. So
yeah, try to get people to sign petitions outside of Home Depot or
not working.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so there was difficulty there. So we're trying to like find our niche and like adapt our methods a little bit. So currently we're at a public library, so we hope that will promote more discussion, since the library, it's a completely different environment compared to a restaurant. So we're hopeful for that.
So now you're at the library?
We're at the Temple Terrace Library, who graciously have let us in there. We go in, we do a discussion about loneliness. Patrons come in, we talk to them. This kind of goes back to, I presented this topic along with some other faculty at the Florida Public Health Association meeting. And they're our partner in this, and a shout out to them and all they've done. But someone, when I was presenting this at the conference, said, have you tried libraries? Because I was like, look, restaurants don't want us. You know, nobody wants us. And I thought, well, no, libraries, you go there to be quiet, right?
Yeah.
They said, no. They do a lot of social events. So we called Temple Terrace, let us in, and we're there. We do discussions, and people, we're now going to do a resource guide, because we found out that people want to be connected, but they don't know how.
Yes, that is a really important point. I want to point you to also that, again, in my research for the show, I learned that there's a city in Sweden that has been addressing this, and they have a campaign going on to combat loneliness simply by encouraging people to say hello to strangers.
That's right.
And they are trying to create a friendlier city by nudging people toward these small but significant social interactions. So they're running a public advocacy campaign called Say Hi. On buses and holding workshops in schools,
right,
like you suggested, to help Swedes get over their what seems to be a natural cultural reticence, you know, to talk to strangers. And so that's something that people are doing. And I also read just in the last 2 weeks in getting ready for this show, a number of things that moved me to give some more thought to what we could talk about. There was an article in People magazine 2 weeks ago about Rita Moreno, who's the celebrity, Broadway star, who recently moved who wanted to talk about loneliness. In this People magazine article, she recently moved from her longtime home, I guess, to a downsized condo, whatever. Mm-hmm. And she was away from her family, friends, and community that had before just would drop in to say hello or meet at the coffee shop on the corner or whatever. It was a totally new environment for her, and she realized she was lonely. Mm-hmm. And the only place she was really getting out on a regular basis was the grocery store, and she mm-hmm. went on a sort of a schedule. She had a schedule, and she saw the same woman every time she went, who must have been on the same schedule, and she just decided to reach out to that right. particular woman, take that first step, mm-hmm. reach out, introduce herself, start a conversation. They met a couple times at the grocery store on the regular time, and eventually she asked her for lunch, and they've now become friends.
Yes,
and I just
thought,
and so she wanted to talk about that in People magazine. And then the other thing that I noticed that was very interesting is the state of New York mm-hmm. has now named Dr. Ruth Westheimer, the wow. sex therapist, who's in her 90s now, to a newly created position of honorary ambassador of loneliness.
That's great.
Dr. Ruth wants to help older adults and all New Yorkers cope with the loneliness epidemic, and she's particularly interested in helping people develop intergenerational friendships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in that regard, some of you who are regular Midpoint listeners may remember that we had on our friends from Gulf Coast Jewish and Family and Community Services a few weeks ago before Thanksgiving to talk about food insecurity. And one of the things that they mentioned that I wanted to get a little deeper in this show was they have a volunteer program called CHATS, which addresses the loneliness, like we talked about, and their CHAT stands for Companionship, Help, and Access by Telephone for Seniors. Mm-hmm. That's their program,
right.
And it helps to increase social connectedness and support for adults 55 and over. Their program matches seniors with trained volunteer callers who chat and check in on them by phone at least once a week. The calls are regularly scheduled at a time which is mutually agreeable, and they can last 10 to 15 minutes. And that's it. That's mm-hmm. the whole commitment. Mm-hmm. And they can talk about whatever they want. They just need to keep in touch by telephone once a week. And according to the people who are involved with the program for the agency, they've noticed that the chats have benefits for both the caller
right.
and the
just
called, mm-hmm. both of whom may be less lonely because of these calls. In fact, they left us with a couple of audio clips from some testimonials from their volunteers who are involved with this program. So, Jess, can we play one of those?
Hi, my name's Dan, and I'm a volunteer with the CHATS program. I started volunteering with CHATS because I needed a way to get the community service hours that my university required, and it seemed like it'd be both fun and convenient. I tend to enjoy talking to people older than myself, and besides, how hard could a weekly phone call be? And truth be told, it was fun and easy. All I had to do was make a phone call once a week on a schedule that I helped decide. But my phone calls quickly became more than just a way for me to easily check community service off of my list. I started talking to Ed in March of this year, and we quickly became friends. We're pretty different. I'm a 38-year-old medical school student, and he's a 90-year-old, now retired, economics professor. To say that our life experiences have been different is a serious understatement. He's a Holocaust survivor who's lived and worked in several European countries, Canada, and the U.S. I grew up in California with a pretty uneventful childhood, although as an adult, I also lived outside the U.S. But our differences have just given us more to talk about. Our weekly chats run the gamut of topics, including our children, academia, travels, work. We talked about economic theory the other day, sometimes just what's going on in our day-to-day lives. Even on weeks when I'm busy, I'm always happy to pause for a bit and talk to Ed. It's also fun to hear his voice light up when he realizes that it's me on the phone. It's become one of the highlights of my week. He ends most of our calls by encouraging me, illegitimate non caberandum, which is a mock Latin phrase that roughly translates to don't let the bastards get you down. Over the summer, I happened to finish up my required community service hours doing something unrelated to chats. It briefly crossed my mind that I no longer needed to volunteer for the program, but I never thought about quitting. I'm having too much fun, and I'd really miss my weekly calls with Ed. I think he'd miss the calls, too. So despite my very busy schedule and my completed volunteer hours, I still take a few minutes every Monday night for our call. I wouldn't have it any other way.
All right. That was a volunteer from the Chats program. Mm-hmm. So that's another, you know, project, I guess, that is in our community that people can volunteer for, actually, to make the calls, to receive the calls. That's another, you know, opportunity. So one of the things that I did want to talk about is, you know, what can people do to get out of this sort of loneliness trap that many people feel that they're in, this lack of social isolation. I read a bit, an interview with Dr. Ruth, who is the loneliness ambassador for New York State now, and she believes that the key to working through any kind of hardship is to continually embark on new projects and to help others. But being busy isn't enough to keep loneliness at bay. It's got to be meaningful busyness. Meaningful busyness that's critical. So, you know, intentionally curating your social circle. So if you feel lonely, don't just be with other lonely people. That's not
correct.
Right?
Yeah, that's not right.
You know, it turns into a bitch session or, you know.
Yeah, it sort of goes back to the structure, the function, and the quality. The quality of those connections are extremely important. So if you're just getting together with people, you can be surrounded by people. You could be at a party. You could be, how many people have been to a party and still felt lonely? There's tons of people around you, but that function, what is it doing for you? And what is the quality? How does it make you feel? Does it really make you connected? Is it beneficial? You know, the clip that we heard, that was a mutually beneficial experience. And that's what you're looking for. The quality of those relationships is so important.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've got an email here from Bubba, one of our regular listeners, who says that I find that Latino people seem to have a better social network with friends or family than many Caucasians. Is there any research on this? Do we know anything about that?
I think we see more family, if you have more family structure, you know, more intergenerational. Jenny or Amadeo, if you want to comment on that a little bit.
Yes. Well, go ahead, Jenny.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, Jenny.
I'm Asian myself, and I feel like I don't do any research on the Latino community, but I do know about my community is that our culture is really structured together because we are encouraged to reach out to our families on a frequent basis. So I feel like that is like something about the specific like community.
That something in the culture that you grow up with may influence your your access to more social connections because you share that with your community or not.
And it's not always protective. You know, even though you might have that, there's lots of reports and, you know, people that do come from cultures that are interconnected, but sometimes people have issues that if they don't have that one or two or three people that they really can confide in and talk to things, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't always help. So, Amadea, did you have anything about the family?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I think the term what we were looking for the Latino culture is a felicimo, or I believe that's what it's called. But, yeah, it's an important protective factor, having family members there to support you across whatever journey you take. And I think it is dependent on the culture. And if you're part of that culture, a collectivist culture, where you are engaging with different family members, it's something that people should really utilize.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I have a different viewpoint here from Robin, who wrote in to say, great show, stuff that needs to be talked about. Yet, I've heard nothing about the need to sit quietly with oneself and go within, breathing deep the miracle that is the human being. And she talks about the value of meditation and being alone and how it does wonders for curing anxiety, loneliness, and depression. And it also helps the brain control dementia. And she says, I find that people are pressured to be busy and social at all times. And sometimes the best social is with oneself. Thanks for that email, Robin. Appreciate that view.
If I could just say, Shelley, she's absolutely right. This is not to say anything about solitude. Solitude is when you need time by yourself to think. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Everyone needs that, right? And meditation and all those things are fine. But I think that's fine, but also we can't lose sight of the power of social connections, though. While everyone needs solitude, we also need social connections in our life. Not that one is better than the other or worse or whatever, but I think you need that component as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that view, Robin. Thanks for sharing that with us. So according to the research that I've read, Dr. Ruth, and work that I've seen from you, there are a lot of angles for addressing loneliness mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. social isolation. Mm-hmm. People don't always explore them all.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I found, because I'm alone now, you know, kids grown and
sure.
the house is empty. It's mm-hmm. me and the dog, and he's a poor conversationalist. But, you know, one of the things that I found, especially as I age, that was valuable is going to a gym. Mm-hmm. But not just any gym. You know, it has to be the right gym where you feel comfortable, where you have peers. And not like if I was to go to some sort of like buff, you know, young, you know, studly kind of gym, that wouldn't be a place that right. I would feel comfortable making social connections. But, you know, I've been going to the gym. I have peers there, and it's a regular thing mm-hmm. that I do. I know mm-hmm. I'll see generally the same people at the same time when I go. And that's been, you know, that's been something that has been very helpful in making yeah. a social connection. And it's not like, you know, an ongoing social right. interaction with these people. It's brief. I'm there. We're there for an hour. We chat. We keep up a little bit with our lives, and we go on to our lives. And we don't see each other outside the gym. But it's just, you know, I remember during COVID how many days went by where really, truly, I only saw the dog. I mm-hmm. only spoke with the dog, mm-hmm. and that was really debilitating.
But if I could say something about pets and pet therapy, though. Pets are great, though. They're a great buffer for people. We do it, the USF at the Activist Lab, the library does pet therapy days, and we always table at those and bring all our loneliness material. And you cannot believe how the students, and again, I want to mention also the younger generation here, where this is important to talk about with, how much they love the pets, how much they love, they bring them in at finals time, midterm, at the start of the semester, and how they start talking with one another, the pet's owner. So, but pets are good. Pets
yes, are, people, yeah. there's, I know that there's a researcher that I've read articles about people, if you walk a dog, for
right.
example, you're in your neighborhood, you don't know your neighbors, you start walking your dog in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. you will meet people, assuming it's a friendly dog and not, you know, like my dog walking with a muzzle, but, you know, assuming that it's a friendly dog, people
right.
will come up and talk with you, you begin
Absolutely.
To meet your neighbors, you develop a social network where you live, so you know mm-hmm. there's a big value mm-hmm. to pets. I'm gonna suggest that Duncan take up that that issue one of these days on his show, Talking Animals, which follows us. The idea oh. of pets as a way to decrease
yes.
social isolation. You
yeah.
hear that, Duncan? we're gonna promote that. I have a text message here from 3860 who says I recently visited with a former coworker and friend who I wasn't particularly close to, but after the visit, I learned just how much she cherished our conversations. Mm-hmm. She's retired. Her hubby has dementia. She's an extrovert, but the home situation has triggered unexpected isolation and loneliness. We now text daily and talk live about every other week, and I've come to value our interactions as much as she does. All it took was her sharing her lockdown and trapped situation that wasn't immediately obvious to me. After all, any of us could find ourselves in that situation if we live long enough. What a great mm-hmm. message. 3860, thank 100%. You so much for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Really, sometimes all it takes is to ask, and I have another text message from somebody in here who talked about the fact that they no longer just say, I'm fine, when they're asked, how are you? They might say, I'm tired, or I'm pissed off, or mm-hmm. I had a really bad day, which prompts mm-hmm. more discussion. The person mm-hmm. may say, unless they're completely cold and heartless, you know, well,
yeah.
really, why? What happened? You know, what's going
right.
on? And all of a sudden, you know, you have a more in-depth interaction.
And I think it's important for our medical community as well. You know, we see physicians, they ask us a lot of questions about ourselves, right? In a physical or whatever. There's a real push now to get physicians and health professionals to ask you about this. Are you lonely?
Yeah.
Tell us about your loneliness, because we see, you know, where can we work on this in places that people mostly frequent? Mm. People go to the doctor.
Right.
People go to the, and so
sometimes elderly people, that's their only.
That's their outlet.
Time they get out.
In society today with the medical system, sometimes you feel so rushed once again. You get in, you see the physician for 2 seconds, and you're out.
Right. Yeah. Let me take a call from Pammy in Clearwater, who's been very patient. Pammy, you're on the line.
Hi, my name is Pammy. I'm in Clearwater, and I belong to a civic organization called Exchange Club. And we do a lot of things that help the community, but we also help ourselves because we get together twice a month, first and third Tuesdays of every month, and we figure out ways that we can help the community. And it's been a great way for me to build friendships that I've had for years and help the community.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing that up, Pammy. Appreciate that. Tell me again the name of the organization and where it is.
Yeah. My particular club is called the Mid-Pinellas Exchange Club, and we're located in Largo. We meet at Ready for Life, which is off of Wilmerton. But there are also two other clubs in St. Petersburg, downtown. There's the Berg and the St. Pete Exchange. And there's also one in Safety Harbor. So depending on where you live and what's closest to you, there's several different clubs.
Yeah, and I noticed that Sean, our news director, has sent me a message here that says the Gulfport Senior Center provides mm-hmm. a service called Reassurance Calls, which are daily calls made to people to check on their well-being for reassurance and emergency assistance if needed. So these well checks and mm-hmm. just simply check-in calls are really important. So thank you for sharing that, Pammy. Appreciate your calling in. I have John from Largo on the line. John, be quick. What do you have to offer? John, are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're on the air. Okay, John, I don't hear you.
Are you there?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, we're here. We're listening to you. So right, make there. It quick, John.
Yeah, we'll, you know, to blame COVID, viruses do what they do, you know, for the lockdowns. But, you know, viruses find a weak host to spread to, kind of like government does, and government does what it does. So to blame COVID isn't really as accurate as blaming government in retrospect that seeks more power.
Okay, John, we're not going to get into the weeds about COVID, so I appreciate...
Let's talk about the depression.
Okay.
The depression of the economy.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to cut you off because we're going to get back to our guests here and not talk about government and COVID right now. But thank you for calling in. All right. I'm sorry about that. But I want to go back to the idea of joining a group or volunteering mm-hmm. As a way to combat loneliness. I have a message here from Leslie, who also says that volunteering, for example, volunteering for WMNF, mm-hmm. Answering phones, for example, at our talkback shows like Midpoint. Mm-hmm. We have Barbara Fling back there who's taking all your calls, who's a volunteer as well. And we certainly appreciate that very much. But volunteering is a great way to increase your social circle, isn't it?
Yeah. It absolutely is. Volunteering, again, it's the connections. And again, especially if those connections are high quality.
And meaningful.
And meaningful. It's just not going out and saying, you know, even introverted people definitely need this. You know, it's just who we are as people. And so it's really important. But volunteering, 100%, that's something important. And it's often, you know, so beneficial for both parties.
Yeah. So another thing is people who have fixing assisted devices like hearing aids mm-hmm. or things like that, people may not, you know, just be receptive because they have some sort of a disability or a challenge to social interaction. And that can, you know, lead to all these negative consequences that we've been talking about. The other thing is unhelpful social thoughts, you know. Mm. mm-hmm. is something, you know, that may be best addressed in talk therapy, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting a therapist, you know, I find that people who, and from what I've read, it's difficult to find a therapist these days, and a lot of it is over Zoom, mm-hmm. but it seems to be more in demand. But you know, talk therapy may be something that people find helpful.
And I don't know if Amadeo or Jenny, you want to address this, but I believe we talked the other day in the Activist Lab meeting that school districts now are doing telehealth for students on mental health, on issues like bullying and other things that happen that puts students in a spiral of anxiety and depression, which then can begin at that early stage.
Yeah, and
so they're trying.
There mm-hmm. are people who just simply feel socially awkward.
Right.
That's how they feel.
Right.
But, you know, it's never too late to get some coaching
Absolutely.
Or some help about that, whether it's through talk therapy or even something like the Toastmasters Club.
It can add years to your life. So
yeah.
we're talking about a phenomenon that has been shown through independent studies now, and the research needs to be better. The research needs to be better. But we are clearly seeing a relationship now between this loneliness and lack of social connections and poor outcomes for health.
Right.
So the connection is there.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I've got Christina on the line. Christina, can you be brief, please?
Yes, I just wanted to say, as a single mom who had her baby during the pandemic, I was inside a lot, and 88.5 was an absolute lifeline for me.
Oh, that's great.
I felt like they were talking to me, the host of the show, like whether it was a music show or political show, it was wonderful. And I recently started a private Facebook group for single moms in St. Pete, because it can be a very lonely lifestyle when the kids are really babies. So it's
great
to do. And we've met a couple of times in person. It's added to being in person, being social. So I just wanted to share that if there are any lonely single moms out there.
Well, thank you. And wonderful. Thank you for your pitch for WMNF and explaining that it really helped you feel less lonely when you were alone.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. Thank you for calling in, Christine. Appreciate that. Those sentiments. So, you know, another thing that I've heard people engage with is OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute.
Absolutely.
Free classes about all kinds of different topics that mm-hmm. people can join and attend, and now in person because since COVID. So, you know.
That's right. Education, it's always, you can learn your whole life. This idea you only can learn for so many years is ridiculous. You can learn your entire life.
And before we end, I just want to ask quickly, and I should have done this earlier when we had more time, but, mm-hmm. you know, I wonder if, you know, there's any sort of negatives to making greater social connections. And one of the things I wondered about was social polarization, you know, like where people get very mm-hmm. tribal because mm-hmm. they just stick with people who think like them and
right.
read like them and watch Fox News like them. And, you know, people get very divided when there's a little bit too much of the same, you know, the same sort of thing. And I just wonder if you had any thoughts about that before we need to wrap up.
Do you guys want to?
You think social isolation is a cause of polarization, or does it induce, you know, more loneliness? I don't know.
I wouldn't say it's a cause. It's more like a mediating variable, because you're sitting alone with your thoughts, looking at different media, and mm-hmm. it really engrosses people in some of the material they're reading, because it confirms some of their biases that they may have.
Right.
And it alleviates some of their stress looking at stuff that is comfortable to them. So I think it definitely plays a contributing role. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a cause. But yeah, that's something that definitely needs to be addressed with a lot of the interventions and a lot of the technological treatments out there.
I don't want to suggest that social connection is a political detriment,
right,
though,
yeah.
because I really think that, you know, we have a more connected community, mm-hmm. is a healthier community, physically,
Absolutely.
Mentally, socially. I mean, when you get people together and you work toward goals and mm-hmm. improving community, whether it's, you know, planting trees or you know, welcoming immigrants or whatever, you know, it's a more welcoming place.
It's such a good thing. It really gets you out of yourself. Especially I love the volunteering angle, but it's just so important and for all ages, young right. and old.
All right. So I want to thank my guests today for connecting with us on WMNF. Unfortunately, you know, that's pretty much all we have time for. But before we go, if you're interested in volunteering, for example, with the CHATS program, you can email CHATS. CHATS at gcjfcs.org. That's the Gulf Coast Jewish Family and Community Services.org. Or you can call the CHATS program coordinator at 727-450-7278. And if you want to learn more about the USF College of Public Health Activist Lab, they have a website.
We do.
Right?
We have a website, or you can email us at coph@usf.edu.
And you have a podcast as well,
we do.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the podcast is called
Advocation, Change It Up.
And it's available wherever you get your podcasts. I want to thank my producer and soundboard operator, Jessica Green, and Barbara Fling, our volunteer who answers the phones for us. And to you, Midpoint listeners, who support us and call us and respond to us on these shows, we're very grateful for your participation and your support of independent, non-commercial radio. Now, stay tuned for Duncan and Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa.